Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption. This is episode 175, Unchecked Emotions. My name is Jessica, and I am one third of the Ladies with Gumption. The other two thirds are...
May.
And Tatiana.
And we recap BCTV in a flash. You can contact us with your feedback or comments that you might have on Twitter at BCTVGumption, where we do our live tweets. You can find us on Tumblr, ladieswithgumption@tumblr.com. Or you can send us your feedback via email, ladieswithgumption@gmail.com. You can find our podcasts everywhere, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, and on Patreon, which if you are a patron, thank you for your patronage. We appreciate you helping us keep our podcast up and running, because those like renewal fees are no joke. So as a patron,
yeah.
We reward you with things like getting the episodes 24 hours in advance and additional content that we don't release on the normal platform. So we get HBO Max premium content, some popular Netflix series such as Witcher, which we need to do season 2 of that too, now that I'm thinking about it, and Shadow and Bone. We've done Bridgerton. We've done a lot of the Disney MCU verse, including Spider-Man 3, whatever that's called.
Or No Way Home.
No Way Home, yeah. Spider-Man 3, and we've also done Star Wars franchises like The Mandalorian, et cetera, et cetera. Recently, we did Eternals, and coming up next week, we're going to be doing You, Season 3. So if you have any feedback, if you watch You or have anything that you want to say about that, you can give us your feedback to our email address, and we will include it in the podcast. In the news, there's a bit of news, not a lot of news. There's new Batgirl set news. So they got set photos confirming a new character. I think her name is Alyssa. It started with an A. Her last name is Yo. And she is one of Barbara Gordon's friends in the comics, and she's also one of the first openly transgender characters introduced into DC Comics. So they got some set photos of what they think is her on set, basically. Do either of you know this character or know like the relationship between her and Barbara in the comics? Anything to add?
No. I did not know the character existed before I saw the photo from the set, but I am excited for this development on the film.
Yeah. And then another follow-up to what we were talking about last week with the Batman mural. They updated the mural, and now it looks more like Michael Keaton's likeness from Batman, but Robin has been like distorted a little bit. I don't know if it's like been defaced on the mural. Maybe he defaced it. I don't know.
Just for one brief moment. And I was like, no, we might take that away.
I think maybe, yeah. Well, we'll see what happens with that. But I think it's, if they started out with him on the mural, then I feel like that means something to the story. Because otherwise, why would you include him only to like erase him off?
Right.
And then also in other DCEU Batman news, we have the Batman, Robert Pattinson, our Bats, and they recently released the screen time. It's apparently it's a 2-hour movie, so it's 2 hours and some change.
2 hours and 55 minutes.
Yeah.
It's almost 3 hours.
Almost 3 hours. Almost 3 hours in total, right? But like the actual runtime, because that includes the credits, plus credits, it's like almost 3 hours, but minus credits, it's like 167 minutes.
Okay.
So.
That's still a lot.
Yeah. So we shall see. That's all I have. Is there anything else that happened that I missed that y'all can think of?
Not anything major, but there was, I guess, confirmation that Eddie will be in the Flash.
Oh my God.
Will be like one episode, and he's not sharing any scenes with
like a Barry. Flashback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just like more
could be in more, but they didn't really specify that, so I don't know how important he is. So I assume
was this the TV line thing?
It was the TV line thing, yeah. So I just assume he's going to be in like one or two scenes, maybe.
Right. Okay.
In the past.
Hopefully, that means he'll have scenes with Iris.
Yeah, I think he will, and I think he doesn't have scenes with Barry because maybe Barry's in a coma.
Barry should be in a coma, though. Yeah. So right. That makes sense. the format of this show is going to be, as it always is, we're going to have two sides. Side A is going to be Naomi. Side B is going to be Legends and Batwoman. We will talk about our joys, what did not spark joy, feedback, and crown a Lady with Gumption of the Week. Tati is going to take it over. Side A is the X-Files. Take it away, Tati.
All right. Starting with Naomi, or really only having Naomi. Episode 2 was called Unidentified Flying Object. Following a shocking revelation by Dee, Naomi enlists her friends to dig deeper into the mystery surrounding unexplained occurrences in Port Oswego and whether they have anything to do with her past and her origin. Meanwhile, Naomi's parents are caught off guard by her interrogations, and another ominous encounter with Zimbardo leaves Naomi shaken. She seeks Dee's help in taking the next step to embracing her destiny. The episode was written by Jill Blankenship and directed by Demaine Davis. What sparked joy in the sophomore outing of our newest teenage heroine?
Well, I like this episode a lot in general. I think it does pick up the pace well in terms of what was already introduced in episode 1 and carrying on those little crumbs of mystery and Naomi being active and trying to figure out what's happening, and even the expansion of her relationship with Dee, who is actually, you know, someone who you can see as her mentor in the future, who's the only one currently providing her any information about her past or anything like that, even though he doesn't know who she is, but he knows that she is not human, and that is exciting in and of itself. And just like Dee is, to me, a pretty cool character. I like his vibe. I like that he's sort of a recluse, but also has, you know, seems like he has some sort of darker past or a painful past or something like that. So I'm interested in learning more about him as well through his relationship with Naomi. And I just continue to love all of the character dynamics, especially Naomi and Annabelle. Annabelle's ride or die, best friend. I love that for her. And I love their relationship together. And even though Annabelle thinks that, you know, all of this stuff is, you know, outside of her, above her pay grade, she's willing to support Naomi and go investigate shady things, even though she has no idea what's really going on. And the fact that everyone else is also kind of like willing to go along with her too, whether it's just because they want to be in Naomi's presence or they actually care about, you know, aliens in Port Oswego is unclear. But I just like the general vibes of their relationships. I also like the fact that Naomi was having a really tough conversation with her parents regarding like her past and where she was from and kind of how they were tiptoeing around it, whether they were telling the truth or not, I'm not sure, but I like the fact that it was a small moment, but like her mom seemed very affected by her asking where she came from, because to her she's like her daughter. So I like that they showed a little bit of how kind of like the layers of adoption and when those questions come up and what that really means for the family and how that affects their relationship moving forward. So solid episode overall. I really like where it's going, and I still love the fact that they're not dumping all this information in one, you know, fell swoop. So we're kind of getting breadcrumbs to a bigger story later on. Also like the confirmation of Superman in this universe, because Thanagar, I think Thanagar has been mentioned in the Arrowverse a couple of times, and it's also in the comics where Hawkman and Hawkgirl are from. So it's interesting, like, tie-in with Dee and Superman and maybe the Hawks down the line. So that was fun.
Interesting. But yeah, I think you made a good point about Naomi's conversation with her parents and how her mother was, like, visibly affected by it. Because, I mean, you know, it's got to be kind of difficult. Like, for the kid, you know, those are questions that you want answers to. Even though you have your parents and you love your parents, that whole, like, where was I from? Who were those people? Why did they give me up? All that kind of stuff. It's still, like, kind of swirling around your head. But for the parent, it's like, I thought I loved you enough for you to not have to, like, worry about it. So I can see how that, you know, on the one hand, to us, it looks suspicious because it's like, why won't you tell her the truth? But on the other hand, as like a parent that has an adopted child, when you hear that, you like on one mind, you understand where it's coming from, but on the other mind, you're kind of like, am I not enough kind of thing? So I thought that was a good point that you made, May. I agree with you also that I feel like this episode really picks up the pace and like the mystery. I like that Dee was being a lot more verbose this episode and actually explaining to Naomi what's going on. Like, he said more in like the first 2 minutes than he said like all episode last time. So the whole revelation that he's from Thanagar and that he felt her because he has wings, and the reason his wings felt her is because she's not from this planet and all that kind of stuff, that whole revelation, and her kind of like having a panic attack and kind of having to have like a woosah kind of moment, really kind of like amped up the mystery of who she is, where she's from, and what could she possibly be able to do. I like that Superman is in this universe confirmed, so that's cool. And I like that she asked Dee, like, can you hook us up? Can you introduce me to Superman? Because, you know, as a stan, that's kind of like on your mind.
Number one, an interview with Superman
would push her way up to number one. But just in general, like, I feel like the mystery is intensifying, and I still love like the investigative like spirit. It makes it feel like Naomi's like reasoning why she doesn't want to be an alien. Like, who doesn't want to have superpowers? It makes a lot more sense when she kind of explains about how, you know, she's always been kind of like a quote unquote alien or quote unquote othered, just by the fact of being like a military brat and moving around, and then being a black girl and that experience that a lot of us have in our lives where we're the only person that looks like us in our class. Just kind of like, you know, no one, you know, you, there's people that are around you that you can make friends, sure, but no one can really like relate to you in all the ways that you feel like you need to be related to. And then on top of that, she's adopted. So there's a whole lot of things that make her feel other, and adding alien to the list is a lot. So I appreciate that explanation that she gave. And because she is skeptical, then we get more of the mystery of her and her Scooby-Doo gang investigating everything. So that's kind of fun. Speaking of the Scooby-Doo gang, I continue to like them as a group. It's like caveat. I like them as a group. I like them all, you know, this group of kids going out and investigating together is fun, I think. Especially like when they went out and kind of hit a roadblock and then came back to the house and they're like, you know what, it's time to go, like, we have homework. Like, these kids actually have homework. It's like, we have homework. And, you know, Naomi was like, you know, no, you can't leave. And he's like, you're with me, Jacob, right? He's like, I'm with you in spirit. I thought that was so hilarious. but I would like the Scooby-Doo gang, like Annabelle and Naomi's friendship, to be honest, it continues to be my favorite part of the show. I just like how much they're here for each other. I like that Annabelle uplifts Naomi and is there for her to support her and when she's like feeling doubtful about herself. So that's one of my favorite parts of the show. And I also, I love how Nathan has just impeccable timing. When Anthony and Naomi were in like the kitchen and he's like, you know, I'm here to complete the triangle, you know. So I feel like I have a soft spot for Nathan and the romantic interest wars. So I like when he kind of shows up, because I just think he's cool. So, yep. Oh, well, and like the Zumbadu and Naomi showdown part two, I thought was also pretty interesting. And it's pretty cool that she leveled up literally within an episode of learning to control her little windstorm thing. So that's fun.
Yeah, he was much less like, I'm the bad guy. So there's
there's a lot more tension this time.
Yeah.
There. Like, I feel like he's so obviously bad guy vibes that he's not.
Right, exactly. I mean, this time he was kind of like, he was like, I just don't want you to get hurt or whatever, right? He was like, I need you, you need to get out of this because forces beyond your understanding are at work here. So I do start to think, like, I was almost like, for a second, I was like, is Dee secretly the bad guy? Are we going to flip it? But either way, I do think it's interesting that we're introducing a little bit more mystery or ambiguity with Zumbadu, even as Dee is getting more verbose, as you said. I love that he's from Thanagar. He could be this world talk man and we can erase Legends of Tomorrow's Hawk people, and I totally support that. As for the romantic interest wars, I am also partial to Nathan because we've seen more of him and I like their chemistry. Like, I also like Lourdes a lot, but she's kind of like, I'm also here. So
she's far behind in the race.
Exactly. Right now it's not looking great for her, but they are also very cute. Either way, I agree with you. I like the Scooby Gang as a whole. I think it's really nice that they're so supportive of Naomi, but also like you said, they are kids. They are just like normal kids up to this point that have their own, you know, concerns or activities. Like Nathan was upset that she was not, you know, participating on this group project with him. Like, hello. I did like that he called her out too, because I'm like, she was being a little bit like, yes, come after school, and then be like, why are you here? So I support you, Nathan. Also, I do love Annabelle. I think that, and also it's nice that we introduced like a little bit of tension in this episode, just in that Annabelle was like very gung-ho about the possibility of her being a superhero, and then he was like, no, I don't like that. So it was good that it wasn't just like, yes, what you say is correct, which is kind of like what it felt like in the first episode. Also, I don't remember the dude that has the hunk of junk car, but that was funny.
Jacob.
There you go. Thank you. It was funny that they called him and then was like, well, this car is useless. And then they had to call Lourdes, which why didn't they call her in the first place? She obviously had a larger car and it worked better, but whatever. It's fine.
Jacob is Annabelle's boyfriend.
Well, Lourdes could be Annabelle's girlfriend. Oh my God. But anyway... also I really enjoy,
and he's a nerd, he likes all the UFO kind of mystery stuff.
That's true. He was somewhat useful in that regard. Also I did think it was nice that Dee was like, well, I didn't tell you before because you seemed to be living a nice happy life and there was no issue happening, right? So I was like, oh, that's nice that he was gonna just leave her alone as long as she left the universe alone, I guess. As long as her powers did not manifest. Like the scene where she was asking her parents for answers about her birth parents, and then her dad was like, you know, I always want to protect you from everything, but I guess I can't protect you from whatever the truth is about your parents, you know? So that was sweet. Also, just in general, the part where, like you had said, they were going to go home, but then they stayed for Naomi until she was like, I actually have to do this alone or whatever, right? And Annabelle was like, you know what? If she says she can do it, then we have to trust her. That was really nice. Because sometimes, you know, you have to trust people, even though in real life, don't do this. Don't.
Right. Do not leave your friend with strange men.
Exactly. In real life, your friend is not actually secretly Superman. So you should not do that. Okay. Also, I actually think that Greg having to work for Greg is his name, I think, Daddy McDuffie, having to work for, like, the anti-alien division was interesting because I thought, because of the glasses thing in the first episode, where right. She was like, why do they have me wearing these glasses when I don't need them, or whatever. I thought they knew. So now I'm right. Like, do they know? Is he a double agent? Does he have no idea? Did they just give her glasses because her eyesight was being
maybe,
weird?
Maybe, like, the military told them that she needed glasses.
Right. Yeah.
So somebody knows.
Yeah, somebody knows something. So, like, now I'm interested by, like, where that is going. So overall, I think they have done a good job building the questions and the tension, and I am eager to open up the world more. What did not spark joy?
I love that there are several love interests in this one, you know, Naomi has so many options, but I feel like there are too many, and there's too many because the show currently does not really, it doesn't seem like they've made a choice regarding any one of them, really, and the fact that Naomi just seems very lukewarm on each one of them.
I feel like if she was, like, older, like, if they weren't in high school and they were just, like, adults in the world, then maybe it wouldn't feel as weird as it does. But, like, in high school, she doesn't need three.
She doesn't need three, and she also has, like, a lot on her plate. And I feel like she's not really thinking about any of that right now, as you can clearly tell when she tells Anthony, that, he, you know, it's not that she doesn't want to go out with him, but not right now, but never say never. But that's not where her headspace is at. So, it's just interesting that a lot of these... all of the love interests seem active and wanting to pursue her in some way, or at least like Lord is just, you know, giving her flirty eyes or something. But she doesn't seem like she wants to step in the romantic direction yet. So it just, it makes me as a viewer be like, I don't really care. So I feel like if they're gonna walk down this path, then they need to commit to more of it every once in a while, or just kind of like drop it for the time being before trying to do it again. And I don't know, like I do want more from the adults. Like we got a little bit from her mom this episode, but I would like for her to kind of get more. We already have more, a little bit more for Greg in terms of like his job and his connections with the military and that connecting back to Naomi's past and whatever, and that's going to lead somewhere. But I would like her mom to have a little bit more than just like, she makes great smoothies, which is very cute, very nice, but you know, just a little bit more of her character and maybe her relationship dynamics with Naomi. And I will agree with what Jessica will say about Naomi's time slot, because I don't understand. I already thought it was weird that they moved Flash to Wednesdays when Naomi was going to be on Tuesdays. So it makes less sense that Superman and Lois is.
I mean, I feel like there's like a connection because she's like a Superman stan. So if right. they had marketed it that way, then I would understand. But Naomi is not a 9 o'clock show.
It's not. It's, and I would have seen
it's a 7-8 p.m. Central.
It's definitely that. And also, like, even if it came after The Flash or even like All American, like that would have maybe gotten more people to see it. I don't know that whoever watching is Superman Lois is gonna be like, Naomi. I don't know.
I kind of get it because she's like a Superman fan or her powers are like yeah, Superman. Exactly. So in that sense, yeah. I get it. But I agree with you guys that it just feels like a very like family friendly, like fun time show.
It's like, because Stargirl came on it at 7-8 Central or 8-7 Central.
Mm-hmm.
And Stargirl is the younger show compared to Supergirl. Right. So it should have, like, if we were doing the same thing, it should have been, like, Supergirl, Stargirl, but it was Stargirl, Supergirl. And I feel like, and I know that because it's a new show and they have to debut with somebody to lead them in, that they chose to put her at behind Superman and Lois. But Superman and Lois is not, doesn't seem to be as strong of a lead in as it should be.
Right.
And then I just feel like the content of the show, it would do much better at an earlier time slot. So there's like two things that are going conflicting. Yeah. Like I know I get the reasoning behind it, but it's conflicting.
Yeah. If anything, right. Superman and Lois should be the 9 o'clock show because that gets pretty dark. So.
And so I wouldn't have to see the like struggle with Superman and Lois before Naomi, because I don't like that also. But yeah.
And that's all.
So yeah, I feel like it definitely should be the earlier show just because it feels like the younger show. And I don't know. I feel like more people turn on the TVs for primetime at 7-8-7 Central. So I feel like maybe that would help it better than trying to wait for people to watch Superman and Lois, because Superman and Lois, I feel like the dynamics are still super white.
They are
the only one that watches the show. So would you agree with that?
In season one, I would. This season has upped people of color in general, specifically black people. I guess Todd heard the complaints. But I mean, with John, who continues to be a great character, and he's not a villain. And now they have his daughter on the show, which
I saw that. I saw that in like the
and
little.
And they have like an.
Is that Lois's character. Daughter? And that is that why it's and like the weird universe. There?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's like interesting family dynamics, and I think it adds a lot. And there's another. They introduced another black character, except she's working with, one of the DOD people who like General Lane was a part of, but he's retired since then. But yeah, so they've added more. I still think it's a strong show, but definitely not. It doesn't have the same tone as Naomi, for sure.
And is it? I feel like it's not a show that the demographic that watch Superman and Lois probably does not care about Naomi. So I feel like that's another kind of reason why I feel like it should move spots. But anywho, about this episode in particular, I agree that the multiple love interest is just like the weakest part of the show. Especially since Naomi doesn't really appear to be focused on any of them. And, you know, like I said, she's in high school. She doesn't need three. It's nice that so many people love her and want to be with her. But even if she's, like, if she's not going to focus on love and, you know, I feel like she has, like, a lot of other things going on. we don't really need to hit the ground running with all three of them. Especially because it leads to some people getting left out, like poor Lourdes. And I think it's like really kind of funny that it's not funny because it's kind of annoying that Nathan and Anthony have this like rivalry, especially because it seems like there's nothing to be fighting over. And even if we were to like compare them, I just feel like Nathan has an edge because I feel like the chemistry is stronger. I will say for Anthony's sake, I thought his asking out of Naomi was really, really cute. Very, Barry, would you like to have an iced tea with me?
Yes.
Kind of like fumbling and very, yeah. Very, very cute. But I don't, of the three, I think he is the weakest and the one that, fan in particular has the least amount of root for. So I think Nathan has a better chemistry with Naomi. I still want to know why they broke up because I don't understand.
Right.
And he, like, in this, that history there, I think also gives him an edge over Anthony. And just them being focused on not liking each other is funny because you have Lourdes, who's like a sniper from the side. So they're going to take each other out, and she's just going to slide right in.
I did love the looks that they gave each other when Lourdes pulled up. She's like, I'll do anything for you. And they're just like, wait,
right?
We have competition.
They had no idea. See, you have to like keep your eyes open, boys. And I also thought it was like, it was kind of funny that Naomi didn't realize that Anthony was asking her on a date. Like, if she doesn't realize you're asking her on a date, maybe that's another sign. I don't know. but then they don't cut the string because she's still open to it. So I don't really know where they're going with all three of those. And another thing was just like the parents. They're portrayed more innocently in this episode, but I still have trouble just from the first episode and the whole like glasses thing. And then like suddenly she has questions like, here's a car, you know, all these little distractions they're giving her. I find it really hard to believe that they have no idea about her parents, about where she came from, what came into their lives on the same day as this attack. And there's just kind of, you know, like Dad McDuffie seems like he was innocent, or it's like didn't even know that aliens were a thing. But I don't believe it. But like just in general, the fact that the UATPF or whatever that acronym is like there to hunt aliens and to hunt, like they're now they're gonna like focus on Superman or whatever. Just in general, it's not a good sign. So, I mean, I guess it's a joy that it'll lead to tension down the line between Naomi and her dad because different sides of the fence. But, I still don't trust the parents quite fully, so.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well. What? Did I not like? I have to agree with the love interesty thing. I also think that Anthony is the least interesting. I have not checked the fandom, but he's the one that is least interesting to me. However, I dislike that to me it seems like he's the one that's winning because she
they sent out a tweet with Anthony and Naomi, like, how are we feeling about this? And everyone was like, no.
Yeah.
But the fact
I'm
that
not feeling it.
It's in the episode and the show Twitter, like,
yeah,
tweeted it like specifically about that ship and only that ship is, you know, interesting.
Right.
Eyes emoji.
Maybe it's because this is the episode where he made his move.
True.
But it is like, she was like, I'm not saying no. I'm just saying like, I can't right now or like whatever she said. Right. And I'm like, what does that even mean that she's like open to everyone? Which is fine if you're trying to go some route. Like if you had two love interests, and of course, in my case, I would pick Lourdes and Nathan. I would not pick Anthony, but whatever. And nothing against Anthony. I just find him boring. If you did like two love interests and then it was, you built towards like a trio, right? Like you built towards like a, okay, well maybe there's like, I just, my heart is divided and I just love you both. And then maybe whatever, right? You do it that way. That'd be interesting. But just having like having three and having her be so lukewarm, like it's like, she's like, hey, what's up? But then the next scene, she'll be like, hey, what's up? She does. There's no differentiation between how she feels about them because they're all just like, hey, friend. Even, and then people will be like, well, that person likes you. And it's like, that's so cool. I will just continue to.
Thank you.
Exactly. So it does make it like not very exciting to ship any of them, right? If you, because like the reason why love triangles are a tried and true formula is because you can be like, no, you're choosing the wrong person when they're like feeling strongly about one person and the other person's feeling strongly about them. That's how it works. It's just is that way. Trust me. So anyway, not that I want a traditional love triangle, but still, it does make it slightly less exciting. Aside from that, I would say I feel like it's good that she leveled up in her powers, and I agree, she did do that. Her leaf storm was much better in episode 2, but I feel like in every other show so far, a lot more would have happened in terms of her powers. Like, there would be a villain she would have to face. Like, even if it was just like, you know, someone is robbing the supermarket. She accidentally used her powers to stop them. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's something that would be interesting to me, for her to have to deal with a situation that she's totally, like, unfamiliar with, as opposed to, like, she basically sought out Zumbato, and then she leaf-powered him, and then he, like, pushed her back, and then he was like, I'll catch you next week. So I would like a little bit more action on that front, basically. And that's all. Otherwise, I thought I enjoyed it. So it's all good in my book. Do we have feedback?
We do, from Swara. Swara says, hello, ladies. I think I enjoyed this episode of Naomi even more than the pilot. Like y'all said, it's important that we start to see Naomi struggle. And I think this episode gave us that, and how we see her friends start to doubt her and let her know that she's acting strange. Her world is clearly unraveling, and getting to hear about her insecurities about not feeling like she belonged was really poignant and relatable. Casey seriously does a great job in lead role. Also, I'm certain her parents in the military are hiding something from her and the whole town. Something is sus. I love that Dee is Thanagarian. Nth metal wings, yes. Will we see Shahara Hole and the other Hawk people finally done right in live action TV?
Fingers crossed.
But other than them, I really do like Dee as a character and appreciate the mentorship he gives her, and clearly has his own history and trauma to work out. And Alexander Wraith is a great actor. Something I don't care for as much is Anthony. See? As a love interest. And I love how the tweet from the official Naomi account asking people if they ship it got ratioed to death. Of people being like, no! Definitely team Lourdes. But I suppose we'll see as it goes along. Looking forward to next week. The end.
All right. So do we have predictions?
May you get any more gems from...
I did not have any more gems.
You're tapped out.
I gave my one for the month, you know?
Well,
you get your quota.
Yeah, not a prediction, but I would like for there to be an epic romance in Dee's backstory that Ooh. Led him here, that would then give us our Hawk people.
I would like to know. Yeah, like, because he's here as like a... refugee or whatever. So
can I spoil something from the comics?
Yes.
From the comics, okay.
He does have a tragic love story.
Yes. I knew it. I felt it.
You felt it in your bones.
Exactly.
The same way Dee sensed Naomi, you sensed he had a romantic interest in that story.
That he had that fingerprint that my wings felt the vibrations of.
Wow.
All right. I mean,
I have nothing but vibes, so.
Nothing but vibes? No, it is side A, so, like, what are we going to say is who is the Lady of the Gumption of the Week from side A?
I would say Annabelle, though.
Oh, okay.
I love it. She braved her boyfriend's shitty car to help Naomi.
And I feel like her conversation with Naomi in, like, the bedroom, I felt like that was very gumption-worthy. In the fact yes. that, like, when they were Scooby-Dooing it up, and Zimbabwe was like, leave, and she, like, checked with Naomi, and then she was, like, the right hand, like, the co-captain, like, okay, Naomi right. said we should leave, and they, like, followed her.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I agree with that. And that reminds me, I guess I'm gonna put this on my likes, Jennifer's smoothies, I would like some of that, please.
I know.
Anyway, on to side B, Nightmare on Hell Street / Two of a Kind. So, starting with Legends of Tomorrow, Lowest common denominator. When Gideon jumps the time machine into the Manor dimension, which lands in hell, Astra realizes that a damned 90s reality show crew has snuck into the Manor and is causing havoc. Unbeknownst to the legends, the reality TV crew is causing emotions to spike, and Sarah and Ava share their true feelings about their roles as co-captains. Bayrod seeks advice about Astra from Nate and Zari, who themselves are pitted towards and against each other, but finds that his past is put on display instead. Meanwhile, when Gideon's opinions are ignored and her relationship with Gary is dismissed, no one could anticipate what happens next. The episode is written by James Egan and Emily Cheever, and it was directed by Eric Dean Seaton. What sparked joy?
I didn't know he directed this episode. It was a good episode. I loved this episode. And it was better than I thought it was going to be because Robo Legends was so entertaining that I thought Real Legends would be like a letdown. But it was actually like a really pretty enjoyable episode. And reality TV is like a guilty pleasure of mine. So like once Gideon committed to like being the TV villain and started like dealing out emotional damage, that was like, you know, all that stirring the pot with literally everybody was very entertaining. And we really started like spinning out in the different like reality TV show tropes, which was great. Nate went full Jersey Shore. And it was kind of funny to see him, like, degress into just being fist-pumping gym tan laundry Italian, which I don't even know if, like, Nate is, like, Italian in general, but he went, like, full Italian. Sarah, I feel like she went, like, Beverly Hills housewife with her, like, vacation planning and wanting to go to some, like, expensive destination and just, like, not do anything. And I think she had, like, a classic housewife TV dinner fight with Gwen, which was really hilarious. I think Spooner confused Survivor with Naked and Afraid. Because I don't know, like, I don't watch Survivor regularly. I've seen a couple of seasons, but I don't remember anyone ever being naked as a strategy.
I read a comment about someone, I don't remember what season, this is something like season six or season whatever. Someone mentioned a season Survivor where someone did that. So I think it is a reference to specific, okay. But I would not know because I've never watched Survivor in my life.
it could have happened out there, but I also feel like just from the seasons that I've seen that would have been like, if you're making people uncomfortable with your nakedness, that is a surefire way to isolate yourself and get like kicked off the island. So I don't know.
Does anybody do that on Big Brother?
Walk around naked? No, because there's cameras everywhere, and those cameras are like live.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch as many reality shows either, but like, I was trying to figure that one out, but she was hilarious.
Yeah, she was. Zari 2.0 and Nate fighting over Zari 1.0 was a welcome pivot from where I thought their plot was going. So the fact that Zari was like, oh, he doesn't win women's tone, we have to protect that flannel. I don't know, after she said like flannel something, like flannel, you know, sweetheart or whatever. I thought it was hilarious. So all of these little like spin outs were really great. I love one thing that I will say is I love that both Zaris, they intuitively kind of figured out that they were being manipulated. So like in the beginning, before we knew something was going on, we as audiences did, but the characters didn't. When Zari and Nate were getting like too close for comfort and thinking like they had to like undress and all this kind of stuff, she's like, I think we're being manipulated. Like, yes, thank God. Thank God you realized. And then even like Zari, when she, 1.0, when she came out of the totem, she's like, this is weird. Like something is off. I'm still going to throw the wine at you, but this is off, just so you know. So I like that in all situations, because even with the Robo Legends, Zari was like, I feel like a different person. I feel like that should mean something. So no matter what kind of universe or situation they're in, Zari will always, like, suss something out, which I think is really cool. Way to, like, continue, like, her character trait. What else? I like that Sarah apologized to Ava for being, like, the fun dad and forcing Ava to be, like, the den mother. And because, it does seem like Ava takes on a lot of responsibility of taking care of the team. And it's not because she, you know, she's good at it. So Sarah kind of like leans into that and lets Ava take on more than what she probably should have to take on. So I like that she promised to have more equality in their co-captainship. So I thought that was cool. A nice little problem and issue for them to resolve in their relationship and move that forward. So you can, even though they're married and they are in a relationship, you can still have like progress and plots and stuff and move things forward. So that was good. But the start of the episode, my favorite plot, Behrad wanting to ask Astra out. I love the beginning when they almost kissed. And then I love that he followed her out into hell to make sure she wouldn't be triggered. Such a good guy. And then like his whole moment of vulnerability in front of all the legends at the end is everything that I've been waiting for since the moment he came onto the show. Because I've always like complained about how he is one personality trait and, you know, never has any storylines. And they started to give him some more like piece by piece throughout last season. But knowing in this like one scene that they had Keeping Up with the Tarazis as a show and how his whole life was kind of like filmed from day one, and it just makes all of his characteristics like make sense. Like his whole dependence on weed and his insistence on being like chill and just basically being like aggressively the opposite of Zari, who is very like out, not extravagant, extroverted, and, you know, out there, like, reality show. He's, like, completely, aggressively the opposite. And that being because being on a reality show forced him to, like, live through all these traumas. And then on top of that, being told that he wasn't entertaining enough and being replaced in his own family. Everything about him and his whole demeanor and why he kind of, like, tries to be as cellophane and as, you know, low-key as possible makes so much more sense now in context. And I kind of wish we got it earlier, but I feel like, see, this is what happens when you're in a ship. Because when you're in a ship, then people want to write about stuff. And so I feel like, I don't know if this was the writer's, I can't really see the writer's backstory for him from the beginning, like all along. I don't know if this is their long game for him, but I know that we wouldn't have got it if not for Behrad and Astra ship rising. So that's what ship does for you. and then finally, even like G&G, Gary and Gideon, calling me a hypocrite for not supporting their love. Okay, fine. he made a point. If everyone else can have a ship, so can you. I'm sorry.
Well, you know what? It was fair enough. It was fair enough.
Fair enough.
It was. But yes, to everything you said, I was really surprised because I didn't think, like, I hadn't watched the episodes and I saw you guys, like, texting each other. I'm just like, okay, is this not going to be a great episode? And then I watched it, just forwarded it through the commercials. I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down and watch this. And it was really good. I laughed so much, especially, like, near the back half when Gideon goes a full program and starts to turn everyone against each other and, you know, is the person in the reality show who's just like, I'm going to start some drama. You want drama? I will give it to you. And everyone just starts,
like,
going,
am I the villain? I don't think I'm the villain. Like, am I the drama?
Yeah, so that was just really great. I like, again, how they continue centering Gideon and seeing this transformation from program who just wants the legends to go on their mission and gives them information to someone who actually has emotions. And I really like the fact that she defended herself against them and told them, you know, they were wrong for making her feel bad for having emotions, because, like, if they can have emotions and run the ship, then so can she. So I was very proud of her in that moment. Cute, Keeping Up with the Tarazis. Love that little tidbit about their backstory and having them be in a reality show, because it makes sense. If Zari was a dragon girl from an early age, they would have wanted to capitalize on that. And then learning that Behrad was not a fan of the reality show and that he was recast
so into horrible.
The family. I know.
That's so bad.
But like you said, I love the fact that they use that story to give us more on Behrad's, you know, backstory in general. Like, there's so much depth there to him, so much raw emotion, and I love that for him, because now he has to actually embrace his emotions too, just like Gideon was embracing her emotions instead of trying to keep them hidden or, you know, getting high to avoid feeling anything other than just being a chill dude. So I'm really, really proud of him, and I really love the fact that it was because of Astra, like you said, because of him wanting to be with her that he was able to open up, and instead of avoiding his trauma, cannot talk today, that he actually faced it. And that was just a really, really great moment. Not only did he express himself, he also saved this damned crew so they can like leave. So that was really, really great and a lot more emotional than I thought it was going to be for him. So I'm really happy that that was in the episode. And Zari defending Zari was, of course, brilliant. I love the fact that she was so mad that Nate just did not care for her looks. She's like, is it wrong to just embrace your genetics? Like, I look good. I'm going to dress really well. You know, the other Zari just wears flannel all the time. So I really love that, you know, she also came to the conclusion that something was up, but that she was also willing to defend other Zari's honor against, you know, Nate, and thinking that maybe he didn't want to go live in the totem with her. So she was like protective of her other half. And what else? Astra just being badass and walking straight into hell and confronting the guy, but also seeing her development in terms of the fact that she couldn't just kill her friends like she would have before she was really in with the Legends. So that was fantastic too. Spooner made me laugh the most because she was just enjoying this whole reality show way too much. And she would just pop in and make everyone uncomfortable. And even
when she stayed naked.
She stayed naked. Like, and they're like, well, no, it's fine. Like, I'm really comfortable like this, you know? So that was all just perfection. And then even like Gwyn being in on this too and being like, I need to save Archduke Ferdinand. We stopped World War I. And then even Gideon being like, we're going to do that. And they're like, oh, that's so funny. It's like, no, I'm being serious.
Yeah, we're going to stop World War I, people.
Yeah. So, you know, I even like loved Nate's line on, they're like, oh, but we protect the, we do so much to protect the timeline. I'm like, sure you do. And I love that his accent just continued to get really ridiculous. I'm like, is he doing Jersey accent? Like, what is this? So all of it was just really good. And I love the fact that Legends just continues to do outrageous things, but also centering with a lot of heart and emotion and character development for these people who are just, they just keep going. And I love that we're getting to see more of them even after all this time.
I started off like, I was like, oh, I don't like reality shows anyway, so I don't know if I'm gonna like a parody of reality shows. But I did like, once it was clear to me that they were not going to go the Nate and Zari 2.0 route, which I was very afraid of, the episode got so much better. A sigh of relief was heard in my household. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a really enjoyable episode. The like pace was like a lot of fun. Everything that you guys said is something that I agree with. I have to say Gwyn finally is growing on me. Like before I was like, go away, bring back Constantine. But now I'm like, okay, I can roll with you. And I love that he came in like, okay, we're gonna save friends, Ferdinand. And that was just like the last straw for Ava. But I also really loved how Nate and Zari were like fighting over Zari 1.0. And also that Zari 2.0 was like, okay, but let's be honest. Okay, I look so good. Like, we're literally genetically identical. There's no way that you're not also attracted to me. Why are you pretending like you are not? That was funny. I also definitely agree with Bayrod getting his moment to shine in terms of like really describing his backstory and how things that seem funny about Zari and Bayrod's relationship actually can be turned around to be something that's like deep and like actually hurtful for him or difficult mm-hmm. for him to deal with. So that was really nice. And that was like the like getting real that broke the spell of the reality show was great. Plus the fact that when they said that, like, oh, he got real. And I was like, oh my God, like real, what is it called?
Real world?
Like the first reality show, Real World. Yeah. When things like start getting real. Yeah.
Start getting real.
Exactly. So I was like,
hey,
oh my
maybe
God.
The first crew is from the real world. And
exactly.
They yeah, the 90s they crew, yep. Like
they're trying to make things get real. So that was great. I really enjoyed that. Also, they did like pull a fast one on me or pull the wool over my eyes or whatever with Gideon and Gary, because all this time we've been like, ugh, this is so annoying. Like, why are they doing this? And then, you know, everyone else agreed with us on the show, and it's like, haha, you suck. But then they turned around, and Gideon is like, why can I be free to love weird human-eating aliens that I want to love when all of y'all find happiness with each other? And I was like, well, now you made me feel bad, Gideon. I'm sorry. You can love who you want. You're a free supercomputer. So yeah, that was really nice. And when Gary ate the time machine device to stop Gideon from, I don't know, taking them into somewhere even worse, whatever it was. Like, she's going to kill us all. Yeah, exactly. Into a tornado. that was super funny. And also, you know, I guess shows that Gary really does care about Gideon and understands weird supercomputer ways. Also love the part where, like, Astro, like, strode into hell and almost got her way, right? They almost were like, oh, hey, yeah, okay. If you're going to deal with these souls, then we won't bother. And then Bayrod accidentally ruined it, trying to be helpful. Thank you, Bayrod. But also, I respect you. So yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it. And I don't even know. Like, I like that each episode, even though there obviously is, like, a continuity of some kind, you could just enjoy the episode. Like, I could just turn on this episode and, like, have a good time with it. Like, Amber was watching, sort of, from side while I was watching, and she still thought it was funny, even though she doesn't know any of these people. She does not go here at all. So, there you go. What did not spark joy?
I feel like anything that's not sparking joy is just me, like, nitpicking the initial storyline for Nate and Zari when they were, like, what I thought they were gonna do is, you know, Nate and Zari, the paint, and then they have to, like, undress, and it's, like, you know, that moment when they look at each other, and it's like, you look like John, you look like my Zari. And I'm like, please, God, no. Because the only thing worse than Nate and Zari 1.0 is being in a relationship in general is Nate cheating on Zari 1.0 or 2.0 because they were, like, forced to from some kind of hell reality TV show. Like, I don't want to see that at all. I want it to like die, but I don't want it to die in that way. So I didn't like that. So I was very happy for, like, the switch up. You know, Bayrod had his hair down. And I feel like if you've got that hair, it needs to be in a bun, like, high up. You know.
Really, I liked it. I mean, a man bun would look
I like bun. I like bun aesthetics. I don't know. But I mean, I'm nitpicking because it was a really good episode. So I don't have a lot to say.
Yeah, I feel the same way about the Zari Nate stuff because I was concerned, and I don't like being concerned while watching Legends, especially when it comes to Nate and Zari 2.0. I was like, God, no, don't let it happen.
Because yeah, I thought it was weird that, like, they were paired off.
Yeah, even the 2 seconds that it was on screen, it felt really awkward to watch. And I wanted to be a child and, like, cover my eyes. I was like, no, no. Thankfully, it did not. But I still think that, I guess I will say that I think it is weird in the sense that they did put out certain stuff for characters. Like with Nate, it was like, oh, you don't want to go live in the totem. I was like, okay, that can be a thing. Maybe he doesn't want to go live in the totem. Or with Sarah, she's like, I want to leave the ship and, like, go have a normal life. And I was like, oh, is this the next step for Ava Lance? You know? Mm-hmm. But nothing came of it. So I thought that was interesting that they dropped those things in there and didn't pick up the crumbs.
Right. Like, maybe, did he still lie to Zari?
Yeah, so I would really like to know.
And if he was still lying, like, I feel like that would have been an opportunity for Zari 2.0 just to have, like, to, like, pan the camera and see her react to him saying that, oh, I'm so ready to move in. Because if she really thought that he wasn't, then I would expect to see her be like,
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, so just little things. I don't know if they're going to pick them up later, but I think that they somewhat squandered the opportunity to talk about them in the now.
Yeah, I mean, most of my dislikes are also just things I thought were going to happen that did not happen. Like, first off, when they had Bayrod and Astro, like, were about to kiss, and then it was like they were being manipulated, and I was like, well, I hope that they're not going to make it that the moving forward of the ship is just manipulation, you know, and thus move it back. But thankfully, that did not happen, and he did get to actually ask her out. So that was very nice.
Or, like, when they were trapped in the room with each other, like, right after, you know, he had caught Bayrod and, like, sent them back to argue. I was like, no, do not do this. Do not do this to me.
Yeah. So I'm glad that that did not end up happening. And then, of course, same thing with the Zari and Nate thing. I was like, they better not end up. Like, we thought they were going to end up having to hate sex. And we're like, this better not happen. This would be the worst thing ever. So thankfully, that was not the case. Aside from that, like, I don't even know what I would say I disliked. Nothing, I guess. Nothing. I mean, maybe if we had seen, like, it would have been more meaningful if we had seen some of these storylines coming in from before, right? Like the Ava and Sarah thing, I felt like it just sprang up in this episode. And also, like, for Sarah to turn into, like, vacation-loving Sarah was, like, super random. I was like, where is this in her personality? Because I feel like she's usually the opposite anyway, so it was kind of weird. Although, I guess compared to Ava, she must be a vacation lover. Ava is certainly the more uptight of the two. But Sarah's still pretty, like, rigid. So I was like, all right.
Like, the last time Sarah went on vacation must have been when she went with Ollie on the boat, right? Like,
right! And that's why she hates vacations now. No more vacations. And then also, like, even though Nate, like, Jersey Shore Nate was funny, I was just like, why would Nate be the Jersey Shore character? Where did that come from?
He was channeling
steel, steel and muscles.
Yeah, yes. I was just like, okay. But, I mean, it was still funny. So, like, I don't have a problem with it. I just thought that some of the things, like, unless they were, like, the main point of the episode.
I thought it was kind of funny. Like, when Harris offered Behrad, like, a bowl of, like, weed gummies, I'm like, okay, this is going to be, I was like, this is going to be the most PG, don't do drugs PSA.
Right?
And then you turn it into something serious, so it's fine.
Yeah. So yeah, but otherwise, I mean, I thought it was super enjoyable. I laughed, I cried. I didn't cry, but I laughed. And I, you know, didn't applaud it at Bayrod having his moment. So, pleased. Do we have feedback?
Yes, we do. From Swara. Legends this week was pure, unadulterated chaos. I would say that I liked most of it as it was a hilarious romp throughout, though some things could have been better. First off, I don't like what they did with Spooner. Like, they literally just made her being naked the one contribution she had to the plot of the episode. Lisette deserved better, in my opinion. While I hate that Steel Hacker is still a thing, their plotline was honestly really funny. Plus, we got confirmation that Nate doesn't want to move in into the totem via Zari 2.0. But he still gives Zari 1.0 the impression that he's still moving. What is the end game here? But other than that, it was at least funny. I love Behrad and Asha this episode. Finally getting to the root of who Behrad is and why he's such a stoner was fantastic. And Cheyenne gives a great performance. I also appreciate that he told Astra he needs to get to know himself better before pursuing a relationship with her. Overall, that was the best plotline of the episode. Sarah realizing that Ava shouldn't have to shoulder most of the responsibility was good. I think I liked most of the Gideon plot, especially the end, but her going apparently evil again, even while it was because of the reality show TV curse, was still random. But I suppose that was the point of this episode, as much as the point of any Real Housewives episode is, random chaos for our amusement. Speaking of which, why does Gideon legit believe they need to prevent World War I? Looking forward to finding out. I think she's just embracing, like, her humanity. Like, yeah, we should stop world wars. That's something we should do.
Her gut.
And it's like the complete opposite of what CPU Gideon would do. So I feel like that's kind of like where her head is at.
Yeah, CPU Gideon's going to be so pissed.
I know.
As for the totem thing, I feel like all of y'all are on the he does really not want to move into the totem and he's just lying to Zari front. Whereas I was just kind of like, well, I guess he does want to move into the totem.
when he said that, and he didn't get like the destruction. Even like when we didn't get the look to Zari 2.0 when he said that, I'm like, well, I guess maybe he does.
Yeah.
But it just still feels like, why would she even bring it up? Like, why even put that in that? You know, that's a plot point for her.
Such a leap in the first place for her to come to that conclusion that I thought it had to be like, okay, she figured it out. But then it was like,
My one question is, I think that they're going to bring it up again because they're dragging their feet. Because, like, why not just move to the totem now? What is stopping
her? Like, why is he waiting so long?
Yeah. So
we're going to find out. All right. He's trying to figure out how to fit all his stuff in there. Okay. So do we have predictions?
Predict that he doesn't want to move in.
This will be the straw This will be the last straw.
This is not a prediction, but I do think it would be interesting to have at least, like, a trial run and him having an episode where he has to deal with all of Zari's ancestors, because I think that would be funny. And then maybe that would overwhelm him and be like, I don't know if this is for me, but I don't know if they would go there.
I don't know that he would actually make it into the totem. Like, I just feel like, you know, if he's taking his time, I don't know if he'll act. I don't know if we'll actually see the inside with all of her relatives in there. That'll be nice to see, but I don't know if we're going to actually get to that point or not. I think, isn't Reverse Flash supposed to be coming back?
Yes.
Coming next episode, right? So, and I thought, like, the preview, they're having, like, a auction or whatever. So it seems like they're not actually going into 1914, but, like, a side betting gallery of what will happen in World War One or something like that. I don't know. But I think that's an interesting concept. Instead of actually going into the war, like, have a section, like a storyline where the legends aren't the only people that mess with the timeline. So creating like a little gallery of people like, oh, I'm going to bet on blah, blah, blah happening. You know, it's going to be really interesting. That's not really prediction. That's just my expectations for next episode.
Right. My hope is that Matt also filmed for The Flash while he was hanging out in Vancouver.
Probably not,
but you know.
No. I think someone said, like, basically it's probably in his contract in Tom. Why can't I remember his last name? I want to say Tom Holland. I know that's not his name. Tom Cavanaugh's. Thank you. Tom Cavanaugh's contract. That he is the Reverse Flash for The Flash, you know? So even though it doesn't make sense, they use him. Whereas Legends does not have any such problem with that. So they can use Matt Lesher whenever they want.
But if it's and the only reason they can use Matt Lesher is because of the flashback, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Or they can use Matt Lesher in the Flash if it's in the future, in the 23rd century or whatever.
It has to be Matt, right?
Right.
So,
right. But they don't do those stories.
Oh, right, they don't.
So anything in between, it's all Tom.
Yep. So anyway. Now we can move on to our third show, Batwoman. Meet your maker. Ryan, Sophie, and Luke attempt to track down the original Poison Ivy when all signs point to Pamela Isley's reappearance in Gotham. Mary feels drawn by a powerful force, which is, you guessed it, Poison Ivy. And Alice suddenly feels very protective of her stepsister. Also, lesbian love triangle drama ensues. The episode was written by Caroline Dries and Maya Houston and is directed by Michael Blundell. What sparked joy?
Most of the lesbian drama and the trio that is Luke, Sophie, and Ryan, because it is beautiful. I think that they have really great chemistry together, and there's so much fun constantly bickering, trying to whisper talk, and just doing all these things together. And I think that they make a great team, and they really balance each other out. And also their bickering creates, you know, avenues for great character development. Like we saw, you know, Ryan is still stressed. I like the fact that she took some time to go to her mom's grave and kind of like talk things out and express the fact that she was overwhelmed and, you know, finally coming to a boiling point where she's just like, I'm stressed because, like, I'm supposed to be Batwoman, but, you know, I'm preoccupied. I've got my brother's the Joker. My, you know, best friend is like Poison Ivy, and I did not even know that she was turning into that. So it felt cathartic for her to be letting all this stuff out and then having, like, Sophie give her the best shut up kiss. I think that it has been, because Ryan has been salty for like a few episodes now, and it just felt really organic that everything came to a head and she was just like, yes, I'm feeling this way. And Sophie's like, what do you want? I will kiss you now and you will just feel better about everything. You will get your head back in the game and feel like there's maybe hope for something, because Ryan did not feel like she could go after what she wanted, or she was having too much going on to know what she wanted. And Sophie made it very clear for her that it should be her that she wanted. So that was a really great scene. And I just love the fact that all of that arguing kind of led to that moment, because they were both expressing all of these emotions. And it just felt really nice to see that. Even Luke, you know, who has not had much of a story going on the last several episodes, is back in the moment of like, am I a hero? You know, thinking that his dad's kind of been holding him back in a lot of ways, blaming himself for a lot of things. But I like the fact that he got a moment to shine in the sense that, like, he got to save that little boy, kind of realized that he needed to, in some ways, let his dad go to be able to move forward and become his own person without having to rely so much on a father who was still with him in spirit but was no longer there. Like, he saw his guidance too much, and he needed to do things on his own now. And I thought that was really great. I really loved Pam and Renee's, just, they had great chemistry this episode. I like the fact that Renee has been, you know, she has a backup plan for if Ivy was going to use her little hypnosis on her, which I thought was really smart because she's had 10 years to, you know, figure something out. And at first I was like, well, how did she, you know, break free? But I'm glad that she did have a backup, because as much as it hurts to think that your girlfriend would do something like that to you, it was clear that, like she said, they were having a toxic relationship. And I'm glad that she was able to confront her about that, because even if you love someone really, you just love them so much, you're always pushing to try to make them a better person or make this relationship work. In this instance, it's like, clearly you guys are not on the same page. You are making each other miserable in a lot of ways. So you're holding on to something that no longer exists. And I thought that that was a really great way to kind of talk about it in that sense. So overall, a generally strong episode. I even liked Alice admitting that she cared about Mary, which was a breakthrough, an emotional breakthrough for her. So I feel really proud of her after all this time. You know, finally she's found a sister who wants to hang out with her and be around her. And also Mary has, yeah, they both did. And Mary found someone who's also, you know, supporting her through everything, especially in this very tumultuous time period for her. So it was just a really fantastic moment for both of their growth.
Yeah. Maya Houston, who, like Tati said, co-wrote this episode, she said on Twitter that her pitch for this episode was Stranger Things meets Cabin in the Woods. And that is exactly how it feels. And when they ran and they saw, like, Cabin, like, oh my God, Cabin in the Woods. So, like, I love the entire vibe of it. I love that Ryan, when they were talking about going hunting for poison ivy in the national park, and I think Sophie was like, you know, do you know what happens to Black people? We're the first people to die in horror movies out in the woods. And she's like, well, you know, Black people didn't write the movies, so let's flip the script. And I was like, exactly. That is great. Let's go out there and flip the script. So I love that line. I feel like Maya's, like, fingerprints were all over this episode, which is great, great, great. I love the Sophie, Luke, Ryan trio. And I'm just going to say it. I think it's better than the Mary, Luke, Ryan trio. You know?
Ooh. Oh!
shots fired. But, you know, I have not missed Mary in this little bat team dynamic. So whatever. But I think that they, the way that they bicker and kind of, like, argue over each other is fun. And you kind of see, like, the, especially between, like, Sophie and Luke in the beginning, when he was like, you know, I've got to, suddenly he was, like, really into training and working out and boxing with her. And so she was kind of, like, helping with that. And then you have, like, Ryan being more pressed than a panini with Sophie's skill. I feel like you had, like, we were talking either last week or on Love Boat about, no, it had to be last week when we were talking about, Sophie and Renee, and I think we had, like, an anonymous, like, you know, y'all kept saying that she's sleeping with Sophie, and they only slept one time. It's like, well, it's present tense for Ryan. So,
Ryan's been thinking about it on a loop.
On a loop, man, for so long. And it's like a, you know, really colorful part of her personality that she's just super petty and holds on to stuff for a long time. So her and Sophie, I love that they were, like, going kind of, like, back and forth with each other. She's like, you know, because, like, Luke was talking about how many mistakes he's made and, you know, all these reasons why he shouldn't be Batwing. He's not meant to be a hero. And Ryan was like, well, at least you're not like Sophie. She lost Alice and Renee. And then Sophie was like, well, at least you're not Ryan, who didn't know that her roommate was, you know, a poison ivy. So just their, like, back and forth is just, like, hilarious. And there's so much, like, tension in this episode between Sophie and Ryan, and Sophie just like not understanding what Ryan's deal is, that if it ended and there was no kiss, it just would not make sense. So I absolutely loved the whole shut up kiss. I freaked out. I was like, oh my God, it's like shut up and you kiss. So that was great. I love the fact that there's parallels in here, because you have in the beginning Ryan talking to her mother at the gravesite about the pressures of being that woman and holding the mantle and not knowing everything and what to do. And then you have it at the end with Luke and his dad about, you know, how he's taking up the mantle of Batwing and believing in himself more. So I like that those, I like that they paralleled each other in that sense. And I also think it was really great for Luke, because I think when they're out in the woods and they were saving that guy, and he, the vine ripped like his dart gun and like impaled the guy in front of him, that's probably pretty triggering for him since he almost died in a similar fashion. So I think that's another reason why he probably faltered when he was supposed to like shoot the gun. So I liked that Sophie and Ryan were kind of there to kind of give him some perspective and some hope back, and he did come up with a solution to help them out. What else did I like? I liked lesbian triangle drama. I liked Renee and Pam. I was hating on them last week because I just like just wasn't given what it was supposed to have gave. I don't know. But this episode, I felt like their scenes hit a lot better this week. I liked them in the present. I feel like, you know, last week I didn't really blame Renee for saving Pam, just because I feel like Renee made such a big decision that hurt Pam for a decade. And if she had the opportunity to a second shot, pretty much, why would you not take that with someone that you loved? So I think that her heart was in the right place. I can't fault her for that. But I also like what their storyline was about toxic relationships and how you cannot love somebody out of who they are. Because, you know, even though Pam loves Renee, she doesn't love Renee enough to stop being an eco-terrorist. And Renee loves Pam, but she doesn't love her enough to overlook the fact that killing people because they
is bad
is a bad thing. So they're never going to be able to love each other out of who they are. I agree. I thought it was really smart that she had been taking an antidote to Pam's like hypnosis thing. Cause I was like, how is she still moving? Like, why is I missed something? Cause why is she up and about? So I like that she was in the back of her mind, even though you don't want to believe it, like you said, she was prepared for the worst possible scenario, and that happened. So I like where their relationship ended. I liked Mary and Alice. I agree with you that it's really nice. It's a weird sort of nice, because I appreciate that Mary acknowledges that. She's like, why do we work? Because that's what I want to know too. Like, why do they work? She says like, you know, you killed my mom, I took your place in the family. I'm like, I don't know if those two like equate necessarily.
I'm sure in Alice's mind,
and, they do. Yeah. But Alice never apologized really for killing your mom, but that's neither here nor there in terms of like the story and where they are now. But despite all of that, they do kind of really work for each other. And I think it's like what you said, because they just found in each other the sister that the other had always wanted. And I thought it was really, because it took me a minute to catch up, because Alice is like reading the newspaper and she's like concerned. And then all of a sudden, oh, here's another Maya Houston tidbit that she put into the episode. Apparently, when Alice made the comment about, you know, not wanting to listen to boy bands singing about condiments, it was like a BTS thing, because it's like butter. It's like, is butter a condiment? I guess it is. I guess that was what the reference was. But I thought that was cute. What was I saying? Oh, the fact that Alice was agreeing to go to Santorini and agreeing to leave as quickly as possible because she was afraid of what Pam would do to Mary if they were to meet. So I really, I like that. And I was half right on two of my predictions, because I said that Pam would take power from Mary to rejuvenate herself. And I, you know, I thought it would, like, strip Mary of all her power, but it didn't. So I guess that's a good thing in the sense that we still have a little bit more of Mary's journey as Poison Mary. And now with her aligned with Pam, that could be interesting. And then the other one, I don't remember what it was. I remember the third season, but I don't remember what it was. But, oh, we missed the whole side-ass plot of Jada and Diggle and all that sexual tension there. Like, oh, my God, what was happening?
Yeah, the sexual tension was good. Diggle was not wearing that his wedding ring at all. He just knew he was going to see Jada. He's like, you know what? I know I told her I got back with my wife.
Yeah, but I was going to say, he did say that.
You just threw that in.
He wasn't acting like it, though.
He was not at all. But yeah, the Batwoman writers were just like, we know how it ended, but we're just not going to honor any of that. And we're going to, like, push Jada and Diggle, because this is, like, it was a lot.
It's not our fault that Diggle has chemistry with all the women except his wife, okay? They have some chemistry, but remember when everyone was shipping him with Dinah?
Yes, I do remember. I do remember. He's a bad boy. Well, on that note, I did enjoy the Diggle and Jada scenes. I'm glad that we're, you know, getting a little hints here and there of Diggle as we work towards, I guess, now what will be Justice U, instead of what we previously thought would be, like, Green Lanterns Plus or whatever. And I did like the bit where he was like, I did get back my wife. And then she was like, oh, well, lucky her, or whatever she said, right? And I was like, oh, okay, tell me more.
I didn't ask you about your wife.
Yeah.
I wonder if they dated between his, when he left Lila the first time. And
that's
like,
what it
before.
Sounded like to me. Yeah. That's what I thought. Because it sounded like, oh, I separated from my wife. Oh, I got back with her. You know, like, okay, yeah. Well, that window has closed kind of situation. But anyway, aside from that, I did love him, like, sort of not really calling her out, but pointing out that she smiled when she thought about Ryan or whatever, right? And, like, so it's that we're, like, sounding more like Jada does actually want to have a relationship of some kind with Ryan, and that it is genuinely Marcus that's kind of, like, the wall between them in Jada's mind. That she can't get too close to her, because then Ryan will whatever. Even though Ryan would already whatever. I don't think that's the problem, Jada, but okay. So, aside from that, I really liked the Mary and Alice scenes as well. I did not miss Mary in the Bat Team scenes, but I did like the balance that we're getting to see, you know, like, because Alice and Mary, really, like, they're not even really being villainous. They're just kind of, like, chilling and, like, getting free coffee or whatever. You know, I'm like, I'm not that mad about that. That's fine. So it is kind of fun to see, like, their little, like, Thelma and Louise style trip, like, they were going to go to Santorini together or whatever. And Alice covering for her own feelings towards her stepsister with, like, oh yeah, well, you can't die because then there won't be, I can't get on the plane. It's like, okay. That was really cute. And like you guys said, I liked Mary calling attention to the weirdness of this dynamic. Like, how is it that we are working so well together when we definitely should not? It was a really interesting conversation between them. And to balance that.
That reminds me, I know the second prediction that I was right about, that Alice, Mary getting, like, in and over her head with Poison Ivy is what would drive Alice back to the Bat Team.
Ah, yes. That's true. That's definitely coming to fruition, and I like that. I do like that they had developed enough of a bond that Alice really is, like, willing to put herself out there for Mary, even when, you know, Poison Ivy might kill them both. And Mary kind of, like, using her powers on Alice to protect her as well. It's all very, you know, Shakespearean. So to balance that out, I also did enjoy the trio of Luke, Ryan, and Sophie, and Ryan continuing to do those little jabs about Renee until Sophie finally had enough and be like, we're just gonna have a real adult conversation about this. Like, this is what I was going through. I'm sorry that I pulled that shit. Now you stop pulling this shit. And then Ryan finally was like, okay, you know what? this is what's going on with me. We finally get a kiss. Success! I was not expecting it to get that far in this episode, so I was pleasantly surprised.
Not only two episodes after our love boat, and they're like, let's make them kiss. This
exactly. Exactly. And I liked Ryan's little smile afterward. That was really like, aw. I do like the moral dilemma that Renee is presented with. So I don't know. Like, I don't know how, where that's going to be able to go. There's not very much room for it to maneuver because of
it's
how
like done. Yeah,
exactly. Adamant, poison, how adamant Pamela is, but you know, it was nice to see sort of like all sides of how Renee felt about it in this episode. Okay. What did not spark joy?
First, before we get to that, I forgot one more thing that I liked, and it was the line that Ryan had about being just exhausted of having to be everything to everybody all the time. And I can't remember if it was Maya or someone else on Twitter was like, that line specifically was meant, you know, as a Black woman, like we're seen as superheroic in the sense that we don't feel pain or we can handle everything all the time. Kind of like Luisa from Encanto, just like, give me everything and you just put it on my shoulders, but you don't really stop to think about, you know, is this something, a situation that one person should actually have to handle, the kind of thing. So I like that that was acknowledged in Ryan in her journey of being that woman and having to be everything from everybody. Because even like when she was trying to like tiptoe to get this all ice, there's like a little kid there, and he's like, see, he's a Batwoman. She's like, shh. He's like, Batwoman, save me! Like, because that's who she is to him. So that was a good line. I like that part too.
Yeah, that was really good. Speaking of Encanto, congratulations for, we don't talk about
dethroning,
Runo, for dethroning
Elsa Frozen.
But back to Batwoman. My dislikes included. Mary not doing enough Poison Ivy stuff for me. I feel like they built her up to become Poison Ivy. They gave her this great suit. And then she's like, let's just go to Santorini. I was like, really, Mary, this is what you're going to do? Just brainwash people to get you chocolates and room service and going on trips and stuff like that? I just feel like it was a complete waste of her doing Poison Ivy stuff.
Childish, well, not childish, but like, not villainous thinking. It shows you how she's not really a villain at all. She's just kind of like a teenager with a tantrum, or like she's in the mood right now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like they hinted at her becoming Poison Mary would make her do some of these things, but that has not been the case, because that was very much the similar case with Pamela. Like, she got, you know, these powers, and then suddenly she was doing all of these eco-terrorist things. Such was not the case with Mary, and I feel like they really dropped the ball on that, because I know that they don't want to make Mary go full evil or anything, but I feel like a tease of her hurting people, maybe not even killing them, but just like hurting them, brainwashing them to the point of they can't think on their own anymore or something, you know, just something to give her a little bit more oomph, you know?
I don't know if I agree with that, though, because I feel like on the one hand, you could say that it wasn't the poison that turned Pamela bad, because it just like brought out who she already was. And I feel like maybe that was the part that Renee was missing, that this was always Pamela the whole time, but the powers just gave her extra of it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even with Mary, is she's like, this poison was bringing out more of who she is. The more of who she is just wanting like people to pay attention to her, care about what she has to say. So it's not really a villainous kind of thing, because she's not a villain. And I feel like I wouldn't want her to even get into the situation where she's like actively looking to hurt people, because I feel like that goes against her being like a doctor and just like the core of who she is. Because how do you bring her back around in the end, you know? So I feel like I get what you're saying, though, because I feel like they made her have this whole outfit and they have not utilized it.
What you're saying is completely fair, and I totally get that. It's just like, it feels like a little bit of a letdown that she didn't do anything. It's like she wasn't active in her role of being Poison Mary. It was just like sitting around a lot of the time doing nothing. So just a little bit, something, just something. And then even like with the Diggle plot line, because Diggle is now, you know, he's just popping up everywhere. He's the Arrowverse, the true Arrowverse veteran at this point. And they continue hinting about the Green Lantern stuff, but this time it was really weird because it's like, oh, Luke was saying that this tech is like otherworldly or something. I was like, is that supposed to be a Green Lantern hint? Because I'm kind of tired and I'm over it and I don't need them to drop any more of these hints. Just allow Diggle to hang out with Jada for a while and, you know, figure out all the Joker stuff without actually having to say anything about what happened at the end of the Arrow series finale, because it doesn't do anything to his poor his storyline or his
development. How long has it been since timeline?
I don't know, but it's been at least a year, right? Like, it has to have been. And I think it's ridiculous that at least he, like, the fact that he can't even give us a response of what he said. He clearly doesn't want to do whatever was in that box.
It's been a year.
Go on.
I think hope the next time we see him in the storyline is because his invitation has expired.
I hope it does expire. He can burn up at this point. And I think my final thing is, because this episode was great overall, but while I did like the fact that Jada wants to call Ryan her daughter and whatnot, her reasoning for leaving her behind when she was a baby still doesn't make sense to me, because she keeps saying that it's because to keep her safe, because she would have been in danger. But they established that Ryan is a little bit older than Marcus. So
no, she's younger than him.
Younger than him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, still, like, she gave her up before Marcus was turned, right? So it still doesn't make any sense why, like, the reason it seemed like she maybe had slept with somebody who was very powerful, didn't want it coming out or something like that, versus this storyline, which doesn't, timeline-wise, doesn't make any sense, and I want them to explain it to me. So, that's that.
I agree, and I don't really disagree, but I agree with both of you, I guess. So, it does feel like Mary didn't really get to do much of anything with Poison Mary. It just feels like this is just, like, a reason for her to hang out with Alice, which I'm totally fine with. But they could have done it. Like, I totally understand why they wouldn't go the route of her actually actively doing something bad as Poison Mary. Because she's not really being, like, whammied. It's not like she has no control over her, like, actions, right? She only didn't have control over the transformation. So... because of that, it makes sense that they're only having her do just, like, fun, whatever, like, girls' night out stuff. But it would have been maybe more interesting. Like, right now, the stakes don't actually feel that high. Like, you've got the team on one hand being like, we have to save Mary. But then it's just like, oh, actually, no, Mary's just having a tantrum, like you guys said. So, whatever. We'll just deal with that later after we deal with Poison Ivy. Whereas if we had had Mary actually being in danger, then I think that while it would take away some of Mary's agency, if you will, it's not like she really has all that much right now because she's not really doing anything with it. So you could have, like, you could still have Alice feeling, like, connected enough to Mary that even though taking away the powers would, like, remove their bond, if you will, she has to do it to, like, save Mary, right? Because otherwise she won't be Mary anymore or something like that. Then there would be something, like, I guess it would just feel more urgent. Whereas here, it just feels like, okay, well, Mary had a cool costume for a while and could get free gifts, but now she does not have a cool costume anymore and cannot get free gifts. I think, if anything, I would say the only thing we're going to lose out on, we're going to miss from this arc is going to be Alice and Mary, but I don't think we will, because like you already predicted, I'm sure Alice will save Mary from this meeting with Poison Ivy, and then she will just rejoin the Bat Team, and then we won't miss it. It'll still be there. So...
I do wonder, though, if part of Alice saving Mary from herself means, like, Alice being the one to, like, strip Mary of her powers and Mary being like, why would you do this to me? And then they're, like, back where they started, where she just doesn't want anything to do with Alice.
That's true. And then that would be sad, too. So there you go.
Yeah.
But anyway, other than that, I don't really have, like, any... that's a lie. I do have a disagreement. I don't think that Poison Ivy is cool. I don't like this interpretation of her, like, well, yeah, ecoterrorism is her thing, but, like, I haven't seen her do anything that, like, well, usually in a Poison Ivy thing, I'm like, yeah, exactly, like, this is bad, but I agree with you. Whereas here, all she's doing is like, well, I gotta kill these fishermen.
It's Bye. So funny because they're like, oh, well, now we have to gut these fish right here in front of the sign that says we should not gut the fish. We're not gonna take them back to our cabin or wherever.
So yeah, she just doesn't seem very fun. Poison Ivy should be more fun. You're like best friends with Harley Quinn. Come on now. True.
She's not a lot of fun in this series. Like, I compare her to like Harley Quinn, like the animated series. I'm
exactly.
Just like,
Come on now. Come on now. So yeah. So I was very much like, I just don't see, even though I like seeing Renee's dilemma, I don't feel like she should have one because Poison Ivy sucks. So I don't
You're like, why do you love her? Renee, you deserve better.
Exactly. I think the Batwoman writers are like this, they have like a speech like, this person is doing bad things, they're a bad person, they're evil, and then fans like, but they're hot. So
And then the other thing that I would say is still about this. When they were like, I guess we have a toxic relationship. I was like, you have been in stasis for 10 years. You're not coming out talking about whether or not you guys have a toxic relationship. So anyway, that's all. I have no thoughts. Do we have feedback?
We do. From Sonia, she says, hey ladies, this episode of Batwoman was so well done. I like a horror movie, and I for one was glad that none of the black characters ended up dying because of those classic racist horror movie tropes. LOL. Luke working out shirtless in front of Sophie, and Sophie being all, this is basically grounds for a workplace sexual harassment case, and you're making me feel bad for eating a bagel. LOL. Love seeing Sophie and Luke sparring with each other. Interesting that Diggle and Jada seem to have a history, and I'm hoping we get to see more of it in later episodes. Luke continuing to be in the middle of lesbian drama this episode was hilarious, especially when he's like, okay, there's a crazy egotarious killer on the loose. Now is not the time for your petty drama. And also when they were in Sophie's car, because you can tell Luke was like, would I rather stay here or fall out of a moving vehicle, and was actually contemplating it. We're going to be hunting Mother Nature in the middle of Mother Nature? LOL. I love when Sophie brought up that black people always design horror movies, and Ryan was like, that's because black people never write those movies and how they're going to make their own script. Love it. I knew that Jada was going to use the Joker's joy buzzer on Marcus again, which would get him back to normal, but that's odd that Diggle is helping Jada. Still, it is behind Renee's back, considering Renee is holding the Batman villain items over Ryan and blackmailing her, which I thought Dig would know. I don't think Diggle knows Renee, though.
Not personally. I mean, he mentioned her, but yeah. Maybe he just doesn't know her like that.
Poor Luke, blaming himself for everything, but also maybe you should have listened to Mary and got some goddamn therapy for your PTSD, and no one would be in any of these shitty circumstances. Just saying. Love how Alice brought up Beth and how one of them had to die, but I don't think this is the same thing at all, since Alice and Beth were literally the same person from different Earths, and Pam and Mary are simply have the same powers, but it's nice to see something from season one referenced. Honestly, I thought they were going to bring up Ryan being Batwoman and Wallace's Kate leaving because she can't be Batwoman, because wouldn't that have made a little bit more sense? Wildmore Kiss, we are one episode closer to Ryan and Sophie being married, as we saw in The Flash, yay. Mary bringing up the fact that she technically replaced Alice as Kate's sister, and how Alice murdered her mom, and then being all, how do we work? Like, girl, I'm asking myself the same question. She laughs that Ryan is so short, her arms aren't long enough to get the salt. I thought that was hilarious, too. Just like Sophie, it's another like example of Sophie and Ryan being like petty with each other, and her making like short jokes against Ryan. And now that I'm thinking about it, I wish Jada's garage had cameras so that Sophie could see like Ryan struggling to get the the anaphylactic pin from the top shelf. Hilarious. Anyways. Let's see. Is this thing Diggle is trying to open has something to do with the Green Lantern thing? I had stopped watching Arrow a while ago, so I literally have no idea what's going on with Diggle. Also, maybe this is how they lead up to
you don't either.
I know. Maybe this is how they lead up to his new show, Justice U, which sounds a lot like Legacies. Thank you. I said so, too. It sounds like Legacies on the CW, being a spinoff of Vampire Diaries.
And
Originals with Alaric being the headmaster of a boarding school for supernatural beings. Renee was so smart, building up a tolerance to Pan's mind control. Reminds me of how Damon in Vampire Diaries did that with Vervain, if I remember correctly, so I didn't hurt him.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was cool, Renee.
Oh, you went there?
No, I mean, I forgot. No, I did not go to Vampire Diaries, but I forgot to say that Renee doing that was smart.
Oh, okay. Yep.
No, I have no thoughts on Damon doing anything.
Finally, Mary and Pam found each other, and Mary seemed to heal her, and thankfully is still alive, so Pam didn't actually kill her, thank God. And then we have Suara, who says, Wildmore kissed! Repeat, Wildmore kissed! The angst between them was so good in this fantastic episode of Batwoman. So much great angst in this horror light episode between Ryan, Sophie, Pam, and Renee, and even between the sisters Mary and Alice. Their sisterhood was so twisted, weird, and on paper shouldn't work, as they themselves know it, but it does so well, and Nicole and Rachel's chemistry is great. Also, even though I'm scared for Mary in the next episode, I love seeing her meet Pam and help rejuvenate her. That was honestly a beautiful moment, and I kind of hope they're still allies of some sort. Full disclosure, I've never seen Poison Ivy as much of a villain. She's fighting for the environment. Okay, fine. Murder isn't great. Pam's vines were seriously scary, and the scene in particular where Ryan nearly sacrificed herself in the car, followed by the kiss, I guess you say it was super scary. Also, hey, Diggle, was it a bit random that he and Jada are old friends? Sure. But I enjoyed their dynamic and their chemistry, which was so sizzling that he had to remind her that he was married. LMAO. I like that we got confirmation that Jada was indeed trying to protect Ryan by acting cold and distant, even though it didn't work out well, like at all. I also love Luke realizing that he couldn't live in the past anymore and his father's confidence in him. And I'm looking forward to him taking up Batwing's suit. Again, Batwoman continues to be absolute fire this season. The end.
Aww. Beautiful. And do we have predictions?
Jess, did you say your dislikes?
I didn't.
Oops.
I mean, I participated in the conversation, so it's fine.
So, we also kind of gave predictions, but do we have more predictions?
I think Renee will also go back to the Bat team, so it'll be everybody versus the Poison Ivies.
Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like Renee will go back because she's like reached a final point with Poison Ivy Pam. Alice will go back because she wants to save Mary. I feel like Alice will be the one to strip Mary of her powers, and whether Mary forgives her for that or not, we'll see. I think that this time, instead of like burying her without water or sunlight or touch for 10 years, they'll just cure her.
Yeah.
And then that way, like, Renee's conscience is, like, clean. A clean break. Yeah.
Support.
Oh! Also, I don't think that Mary killed that guy. I think that Pam killed that guy. But it looked like Mary killed that guy. Because I think she still has a body count of zero. Yeah.
I agree. I agree with this. All right. So, now do we have a lady with gumption?
We said Annabelle for Naomi, right?
Yes, we did. Annabelle for Naomi.
Legends... Astra?
Yeah, I want to say Astra for Legends. I agree with that.
For
there's so Batman many lesbians.
Oh, I know.
It's kind of hard.
I mean, Pam had a lot of gumption. Just
she sure did.
Came off the bat just killing people.
She really did. She really did.
Sophie had the gumption to just shut up Ryan with a kiss.
That was actually going to be my vote.
Jada had the gumption to finally go after little Buzzer.
So,
what do we say?
Well, I guess I'm just going to vote for Ryan for making my dream. Ryan, Sophie for making my dreams come true.
Sophie for Batwoman or Sophie overall?
Sophie for Batwoman. Overall, okay. I think I'd probably say Astra just because I really liked her fighting for the people of the manor. The real Legends. World. Real yeah. World Legends Manor.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Annabelle.
No. Yeah.
So it's either Astra or a Batwoman.
Mm-hmm. A Batwoman.
Well, then you have also Renee who...
She's the one that chose to leave the toxic relationship. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of gumption.
That takes a lot of gumption. Especially since she's been wanting to see Pam for the last 10 years.
So sad.
Oh my God, this is really hard.
We gave it to Renee last time though, didn't we?
We did give it to Renee last time.
True.
So she's out.
I think it's, yeah. I would say no, don't give it to her again, even though I would say I would be more likely to give it to her this episode than the last episode. But but we already gave it to her, so moving on from her.
I want to say Sophie for Batwoman, but yes, I agree with Astra overall. But for Sophie, I will argue, though, backtracking, I guess, that she forced Ryan to confront what it is that she wanted. Mm-hmm. She made Luke feel better about feeling guilty for not being good enough, and actually made Ryan focus, refocus on what was right there in front of her rather than
she getting did do what needed to be done.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, because that was going to lead towards Pam, actually, just for coming out with, like, a bang and being so, like, single-minded in her purpose, like, driven by who she is as Poison Ivy and being an eco-terrorist and not really being, like, persuaded by anything. But I do think that you make a good point about Sophie's contributions to the episode overall. Mm-hmm. Would you give it to her over Astra? I feel like you kind of made the case to give it to her over Astra.
I think so, because as much as I loved Astra in the episode, she really only had one big scene where she was fighting for the team, and we've seen her do that before in a lot of.
And she did have a lot of. This episode was about like her growth, the fact that she didn't really belong in hell. Like, she was vulnerable in hell because she's no longer just like a hell
person. A hell demon.
She's actually like more human.
Yeah.
Which is great, but I think that you made, like, a really good case for Sophie, so I'm going to go with Sophie.
I support Sophie.
Okay.
Yay, Sophie!
All right. Well, thank you all for coming, and catch you again next week, where we will do the episodes available to us, as well as You Season 3 after so long. So catch us on the flip side, and send us your feedback at DCTVGumption on Twitter, or ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. Thank you all, and good night, day, or afternoon.
Bye, everybody.